At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought.
And welcome to the Off Your Brand Show today, where you're going to want to take notes, especially today, because I got a guest on. He's so good. This is the second time on the show. That's how much I love this man and how interesting his content is. So let me read your quick profile and give you a reason to stick around. He's a best-selling author of Activate Your Vagus Nerve and the newly released book, Upgrade Your Vagus Nerve. It's not Vagus, Vagus. We'll talk about the pronunciation in a minute. He's also the host of the Health Upgrade podcast. And after graduating as class valedictorian from Canadian Memorial Chiropractic College in 2010, he went on to practice traditional chiropractic for years until he utilized the power of functional medicine to transform his own health. He walks the walk here, folks. Really cool. He is the founder of Health Upgraded. It's an online functional health consulting clinic, and it supports optimal health by elevating the awareness and function of the vagus nerve. And he's going to tell us today how there's one nerve in our body that, like the Lord of the Rings, rules them all. So one nerve that can actually take care, give you the optimal health. So without further ado, let's introduce our good friend, Dr. Navas Habib. Hi.
Great to be how here, Doug. So excited to be on here with you again.
I remember hearing about this on our last show, the episode, and the things you're doing, and even some of the little devices you've got. And man, there's so many people suffering from all the things, right? Migraines, and you'll go through the details. But and I'm guessing, of course, that the controversial thing, the reason that people should listen is there really one? I mean, it seems like there's so many things with health, diet, exercise, rest, water. You're saying this one nerve could actually control our optimal health for everything.
Yeah, that's exactly right. This is the nerve of optimal health. The vagus nerve is, for me, the answer to all of these things that seem like they're happening in different areas all around the body, really all converging. It's the one uniting factor within the body, and that is the vagus nerve.
And where is it? Is it back here somewhere? Where's the nerve?
It's pretty much everywhere. That's actually funny enough why it's called vagus. And yes, you were correct with the pronunciation. It is vagus, just like Las Vegas, but spelt V-A-G-U-S.
Yeah.
And it actually starts off in the brainstem. It's a cranial nerve. We have 12 pairs of cranial nerves. The vagus nerve, it's actually two nerves, one on each side. And they actually start off in the brainstem just below the skull. And they come out and they actually go down through the neck. And they have a couple of branches, one to the ear, a couple to the back of the throat, a couple to the actual laryngeal muscles. So the reason we can go really, really low or really, really high with our voice is because we have this pulling and stretching of the muscles around the vocal cords, because the vagus nerve is sending signals to those muscles. Okay. But then it continues down. And this is where the name vagus really pops up, because the root word of it is vague, or wandering is really what it's meant to be, because it's the nerve that connects all these different organs within the body. So when it comes down into the chest cavity, into the thorax, it has a very important and very specific branch that goes to the heart, multiple branches to the lungs, continues along the esophagus, and then goes through the diaphragm into the abdomen, where it connects to essentially every single organ in the body. And that's really important to understand, because there's no other nerve like it. The vagus nerves will come together, coalesce, and send signals to and from all of these very specific organs to the brain and back down. And that relay of information is what's required in order to know what's going on in the body in different organs at all times, and be able to send signals to control certain processes within the body, particularly the process of inflammation. And that's a really important piece to maintaining good health and maintaining optimal function.
Yeah, boy, we don't have enough time for all the things I want to ask. I'm going to start with what you just mentioned, right? Inflammation, right? It feels like it's like the number one thing that is the root cause for a lot of problems that people have. Yet the body is trying to heal by inflaming something and protect it, right?
Yeah, so absolutely.
That's why I had a discussion with another chiropractor.
You're not wrong there.
Yeah, another chiropractor about, well, if it's supposed to like when you have a fever, the body is burning stuff away to help you, you know, keep away the bad stuff. I get that. But inflammation, we try to like reduce it, but it's supposed to be doing something. Tell me how this works. Was it just supposed to go for a few days and then go away, and it doesn't? Tell me about inflammation. I want to get this one fixed.
That's pretty close to dead on, in fact. Okay. So the best analogy I can give is a car. Okay. We all are like a car, and we all have a an accelerator and a brake pedal. Mm-hmm. And some people have a third shifter, but that's okay. We don't need to get into that. We've just got the two really important ones here.
Yeah, right.
We've got the accelerator and the brake. Mm-hmm. The accelerator is going to make us go. It's the drive. It's the push. Without an accelerator, a car is a hunk of junk sitting in the garage. It's not doing anything, not going anywhere, not helping you get to where you want to go. And that accelerator push occurs under stress. Our body has various forms of stress that it'll take in. It can be physical stress, biochemical stress, emotional stress.
Yeah.
All these different types can come in and cause us to push the gas. And our body, when we're pushing the gas, is going to trigger small amounts of inflammation. That's how our body responds. So we have this extra stress popping up. We produce more blood sugar. The sugar in our blood bloodstream goes up. We send these energy-producing signals to all of the cells in our body because we want to go, we want to produce, we want to do something.
Yeah.
Now, the key is, if you're pushing the accelerator and you're coming to an intersection, you need to slow down. You need to be able to not let that car be a danger to society, right? Or to yourself. So we need to start pushing the brakes. And the brakes help to control that inflammatory process. They help to control how our body is responding to those stressors. Okay. And so that inflammatory response is reduced when we push the brakes. In the body, the brakes are sent, the brake signals are sent through the vagus nerve. And when the vagus nerve is not working, you can basically consider it like a car that has a very powerful functioning accelerator and no functioning brakes.
You're pumping those brakes.
That's what's
not working.
Key to this.
Yeah.
Exactly. And for a lot of people, that's the issue. They've been pumping brakes for so long because we've been under so much different type of stress. There's so many different things that are causing us to go down that path of inflammatory activation that we can no longer control that inflammation effectively, and we go down the path of disease.
So technically speaking, the vagus nerve is sending electronic signals saying do things, right? So it's going to tell you to do things. So if the brakes aren't working, are the signals not going? Are they stopped? Are they interrupted? What's technically speaking on that?
For most people, it's slowed down. So they're just not as strong of a signal that's being relayed.
Okay.
Remember, when we're talking nerves, we're not simply talking an electrical signal. The electrical signal is important. The myelin sheath will help drive the jumping of a current along the length of the nerve. But at the end of that nerve, where it's sending the signal out, is a synapse, and it's going to create a biochemical response there. It's going to release a neurotransmitter called acetylcholine. Mm-hmm. And so there's multiple pieces to this puzzle that are missing potentially. You might be lacking electrolytes, which are important for relaying that, that electrical pulse through the nerve. You may be lacking acetyl-CoA or choline, which are nutrients required to produce that acetyl-CoA thing at the synapse. And you may just actually have a reduction in the receptors that are looking for the acetylcholine. So there's multiple places where that issue pop up. And what we call it is low vagal tone when that happens, when we're not able to get those vagus nerve signals to the endpoints where it needs to go.
The biochemical thing is what I was missing. Okay, yeah, because it's not like as simple as a car with hydraulic fluid leaking. There's actually the gas is going to, the electrical signal's got to do something, not just say hello. It's creating whatever it's creating, like, I don't know, chemicals, endorphins, stuff like that, for depending on where it's going.
The release of those neurotransmitters, exactly.
Right. Hormones and all that. Okay, cool. So when how does a person's vagus nerve get affected where it doesn't work so well? What happens that makes those brakes pump versus working well?
Yeah, and in fact, this is where we need to start training, especially if I'm a parent, so I see this firsthand. I need to start teaching my kids how to do this from an early age, because for a lot of people, we were not trained to turn the brakes on, make sure that they're working, make sure that they're functional long term.
Yeah.
And there's ways we can do this that are really effective and that have been around for thousands of years, but we've discounted them pretty easily. And number one is it all comes down to how you breathe. Your breath, the control of your breath, is the key to everything. So the simplest thing that I'll say is try taking a breath right now, putting a hand on the chest, putting a hand on the belly, and take a breath and see what happens. And what you're looking for is which hand is moving. Is it the hand that's on your chest, or is it the hand that's on your belly as you take that?
I'm kind of even right now.
even. Okay. For a lot of people, it's going to be chest that's moving. For some people, it'll be belly that's moving. For some people, it'll be even as well. What we're looking for is the primary signal of whether you're breathing correctly is that the hand that's moving should be the hand that's on your belly. Okay.
Belly.
Your belly should be exactly. That's a direct sign of diaphragm being the primary driver of the breath. Yeah. When we're using our chest only, we're actually sending signals through and using our accessory breathing muscles. These are the secondary breathing muscles that often will cause tight upper back muscles or tight shoulder muscles, and why people have so many headaches and challenges that occur secondary to postural issues and secondary to breathing issues. So if we're not using the diaphragm effectively, we're actually telling our brain that we are under stress. The using the diaphragm is telling us, is literally the physical way to send a signal to our brain that we're not under stress and that we can push the brakes. And that is what we use to turn the vagus nerve on. When people don't know how to do this from an early age, because they've been taught to breathe with their chest and not let their belly out and do all these things that are focused on breathing with their chest, and they go into this anxiety phased breathing method that is short, shallow, and chest focused, and through the mouth rather than the nose, these are signs that we're sending to our brain saying we're under stress, even when we're not truly under stress.
Wow. So it's fake stress. So do you have less patients who are yoga instructors and and wind musicians, right? I remember breathing my diaphragm when I was playing a trombone. It was very important.
The goal is to turn them into musicians and yoga instructors. But yes, that is exactly right.
Okay. And are you a fan of Wim Hof, the Wim Hof guy, all that breathing stuff he does?
Oh, I love it. I think Wim Hof is the ultimate example of vagus nerve activation. No question.
I just know anecdotes. If you want to give the audience a couple of things, what he's done just by breathing, you know, it's just, sounds crazy, hiking the, you know, Mount Everest barefoot or everything.
Yeah, he's barefoot, wearing shorts, no shirt, and he summited Everest. Or he didn't summit, but I think he got to the base camp or something like that. Regardless, he got to base camp Everest with shorts. Like, that's it. So that's one thing. Control of his breath. He has a group of people that he'll take doing this on a regular basis.
Right.
But the even cooler one, there was a really interesting study. This was done about 30 years ago. He had researchers inject him with something called lipopolysaccharide, LPS, which is literal bacterial toxin, which in a normal person, if you have LPS injected into, you will die. And he had them inject the LPS directly into his body, and he breathed through it to control the inflammation and actually shut down the LPS, released it from his body with no other intervention. Yes.
Deadly toxic bacteria purposely injected that's just normally lethal. He breathed it away.
Yeah.
And they document all that.
In all research studies where they're trying to trigger an inflammatory release, LPS is what's used. He had LPS directly injected into him, and he breathed his way through, not allowing it to affect him the way that it would.
Wow. Okay. So, and that's obviously related to the vagus nerve, what he's doing there. It's not just the breath thing, right? Just to be clear, because we like him, but we're talking to you. So, okay. This is great stuff. And gosh, I don't know where to go on that. That's inflammation. That's one thing. It's common with a lot of ailments that people have. What's the number one complaint you have from the, you know, I'll just take the demographic of our audience here, the 45 to 65 crowd, CEO, founder people. What's the number one challenge they have, in terms of health?
More often than not, these founders, CEOs, they're under stress, but they're not listening to what their body's trying to tell them. And they're not aware of some of the small whispers that are kind of occurring that they need to become aware of, because otherwise they're going to turn into screams down the road. So some of the bigger ones are your gut dysfunction. Potentially you might not have the best digestive tract, you might not have the best digestive function. That's really important to fix because right. your gut is where all nutrients come in, but it's mm-hmm. also where the majority of toxins and other issues can actually enter the body. Okay. If we don't have a good, strong, solid gut, that is a major driver of things like LPS making their way into the body mm-hmm. and driving an inflammatory response that's unnecessary. So the gut is really where I'll put a ton of effort.
Yeah.
And then the second one is the brain and brain function and brain mm-hmm. fog, inability to think entirely clearly, having memory challenges, having issues with walking into a room and forgetting why, or difficulty controlling emotions. These are all direct signs that there's some sort of inflammatory process that's occurring in the body, but it's mm-hmm. made its way into the brain. And when we can't think as clearly as we want, that's a major red flag that something is getting in and causing an inflammatory process in an area where it shouldn't be.
Yeah. Okay. So we have the vagus nerve controlling everything. Breathing is a fundamental way to get it to work better. What else besides yes. breathing?
Yeah. So there's things that we can do that are stacked on that breathing method, right? So A, you want to learn how to breathe at rest in a normal situation using your diaphragm. Okay. Then we can start to teach ourselves to breathe really effectively without even being in this restful state where we are under stress, but starting to drive that breath response. Okay. So things like a cold ice plunge or a cold plunge type of mm-hmm. idea is a really interesting way to put your body in a stressful scenario, but breathe your way through that stress.
Oh my God, that's so cool. I did that. I by accident, I was in a, I was at a, you know, Olympic resort spa thing. And there was a 50 degree awesome. Cold dip pool. And there was a Russian yeah. Olympic guy in there training. He jumped in there and they said the sign on the thing goes, you know, limit your plunge to 5 minutes. My first yeah. day, like 3 minutes, I got out. And then I watched yeah. him like, oh, I just relax a little bit. Right. So I did. And by the third or fourth day, I was up like 15 minutes, maybe too much, that's but amazing. I was just testing myself. Right.
But you were teaching your like, body to breathe through.
Yeah. yeah. Because and I, even at the, we did a 10K last week and everyone's shivering. It was a little colder than it should have been down here in Charleston. Everyone's going like this, tense. I'm like, no, I relaxed and it didn't hurt as the pain was not as bad in the cold when you relax versus tensing up. Is that right?
And that's exactly what happens because when you get into a cold shower, you get into a cold plunge, your yeah. body immediately goes into a physical right. stress, contracted straight state. And when you teach yourself to breathe through it, you release. And one of the signs, you mentioned the 10K, one of the signs of a person who's going to accelerate and actually get to like finish their race or do it really effectively and recover really effectively is how they breathe. And yeah. that is a direct sign of your resilience to these stressors. So the vagus nerve is sending these signals to initiate this resilience and recovery process. Because when we are pushing the accelerator under stress, we can't heal. Our bodies cannot turn on the healing response of our immune system when we are under stress. It needs to happen when we're in a rest, recover state. And that's what's signaled through the vagus nerve is these signals of acetylcholine that go to the immune system cells, telling them not to fight what's going on, but rather to fix the issues that are currently present. The wow. fight to fix is what needs to happen. That's a state shift that we're looking to create.
Okay.
And when the vagus nerve is not signaling, our body stays in that fight state more mm-hmm. often. So when somebody has good, strong vagus nerve function, strong resilience, they're more likely to be able to fight through an endurance routine, like a long bike ride or a long run. I'm a cyclist myself, so I know when I'm not breathing effectively, I cramp up real easy versus when I start breathing effectively and I focus on my breath, the cramping goes away. Hmm. So it's a really interesting psychological response that we need to yeah. work on to create that resilience.
So you do the cold dip thing yourself?
I do, not as often as I'd like, but it is absolutely one of the things I love to do.
Right. Do you have to do that to...
That's at
to,
a cold shower.
The cold shower. Do you have to do that to train the thing? Or can you just focus on breathing without stressing the body, without shocking the body?
There's different stressors we can use. So all mm-hmm. different types of temperature therapy. You could do a sauna, for example, is another yeah. great way to do it. You get these heat shock proteins that are going to be sent out at the same time. It's not nice to be sitting in 120 degree sauna for hours on end. right? That's a stressor as well.
Oh, so yeah. Whoever invented this hot yoga thing should be shot, right? That hot yoga is not, it makes no sense. Sorry, I cut you off. So you could do hot or cold. Either.
It's not my thing.
Yeah. Anything that basically you're training the nerve to
exactly. All of these processes, yes, there is a mental component to it, right? Like being able to step into a cold plunge and stay there for as long as you can, there's a mental component to it. But when you learn to breathe really effectively through it, it becomes way easier. It's never easy to get in, but it's much easier to stay in. You trained yourself to do that when you went from 3 to 15 minutes, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah. And I also tried the cryotherapy, just air, right? Cold thing. And that was same thing. Yes. First time, like, holy crap, what am I doing? And by the second or third time, like, I could stay in here for a lot longer if I wanted to. But that was
because you've become more psychologically aware of what's going on, and B, you're able to actually experience it and know what your body needs to do to work through it. And so you train that mental component, but what you're working on is building strength and building that capacity for the vagus nerve to send signals of control.
Okay. Training it. Got to work out your muscles. Don't forget to work out your nerves. Okay.
100%.
What's in your second book that wasn't in the first one? Hold that thing up. I want to show your book.
A lot more. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The second book has a lot more clinical experience. So this
Upgrade your vagus nerve. Okay. More clinical stuff. Would I like it as a non-clinician?
Yeah, I think you'd appreciate it. So I learned a lot in the 5 years between the books coming out, and that had a lot to do with what causes the vagus nerve to become dysfunctional in the first place. I'm a really big fan of timelining things out, being able to understand you had some sort of life event occur, and then soon after that, you started having these health symptoms, or you had some sort of health crisis, and soon after that, a different issue popped up in your body.
Yeah.
So timelining these things out is really important. And I talk about stress in a little bit more of a breakdown way. We tend to think of stress as just this complete negative. We need a little bit of good stress. This is what's known as eustress or EU stress. This is like financial goals, right? This is like, I want to have, 18% body fat or whatever the goal is that you want to get to. You want to have that. And that is actually a goal or a drive that you're moving towards. And that's a good stressor. I like to think of EU stress as something that's driving you towards something you want to achieve, where negative stress or distress is what's driving you away from those goals or pulling you away from those. Right?
That makes sense, we're
moving towards something, but we're still pushing the accelerator to get towards that thing versus something that's pushing the accelerator unnaturally, not through our body, and it's causing us to move away from the goal.
Love it. Obviously, you know what we do. We're a ghostwriting publishing company, so we're always interested about our authors' topics. I'm also interested about your author marketing and how you get the word out here. So, tell us a little bit about how you got your because you're like just folks. Just so you know, we are talking with the leading number one guy on the vagus nerve here. There's nobody. Go to Amazon. His book is number one. All of them will be, but he's the primary person for this topic. So, number one, thank you for being on the show today. I should have opened with that. my point is, as you go out there and promote this, what are some of the core things you do to help get the word out and get more books into more hands of people?
Yeah, I was really lucky. Over the last 5 years, I've built a pretty strong network of individuals that I can lean on to ask for favors, to ask for support, and they trust the work that I'm doing. And so over the last couple of years, I've actually started speaking at a lot of different events. I'm going to be in St. Louis later this week. I'm going to San Diego in a couple of weeks, Florida a couple of times. There's a lot of different conferences and speaking engagements. That's been a huge area of growth for me, a lot more engagement, a lot more profile, I guess, is occurring there. And because of that, my network has grown. And this is where I've reached out to a lot of these wonderful friends that are, let's call them social media influencers in some way, focused in the health space, but they have quite a large following. Mm-hmm. And what I did around my launch day, which is early February, I reached out to many of them months in advance, had dates plugged in, and we started doing Instagram lives leading up to the day of for pre-sales. And then on the day of, I did about five or six big Instagram lives with people that had anywhere over 50,000 mm-hmm. Instagram followers, and just started blowing it up that way. And that went live on Facebook. That has gone on so many different areas.
Right.
And lucky enough, I actually was speaking at an event in New York, timed very close to the book launch, and was able to do an amazing book signing event on site in New York as well. So just trying to kind of pair different events, mm-hmm. different opportunities with the launch of the book, I think did a really good job. We actually charted in the first week when the book released, which was awesome.
Nice. So nice.
Excited That's for great. That so, to have occurred.
In summary, folks, listen to what he said. The first thing you said was something I talk about all the time, relationships. Yeah, you can try to do your social media stuff. That's fine. But if you don't have the relationships to the people of influence, you're going to be, you know, shouting in the rain here. You really want to develop those relationships first. And that was a key component there. And then getting on as much media as you can certainly helps. Yes. Now, you're the number one person in this topic. So somebody else might say, well, it's easy for you. You're like, you know, you're the big dog here. What about when you first started out? Was it the same process, or did you do anything different when you first launched your first book?
I was an absolute nobody when my first book came out. It's really an interesting mm-hmm. Kind of story on how it occurred. I was asked by a publisher who read a blog post that I had written about the topic to write a book on the topic. It was a very unique mm-hmm. Story that the book actually even came out. But I had like minimal following. I had minimal relevance in the world of functional medicine when it first started. And that was really, it was tough for me to make that decision to go. But that said, I started, I truly believe in what I'm talking about. You can see there's a bit of passion or understanding and just like I'm in it all the time. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was just get the message out there. Just start talking to some more people, just start getting out. And lucky enough, weirdly, my book released in April, I believe, of 2019. Uh-huh. And about a year later, the world went into uh-huh. lockdown.
Yep.
And what happened around lockdown time was online summits started to take off. Yeah, and I had been on a couple the year before. And I was very blessed. I got on the Anxiety Summit, which was a really interesting one run by a lady named Trudy Scott. I got onto her summit in November of 2019, and she recommended I speak to one of her friends who was running another summit. And this was January of 2020. I recorded for what's called the Mind, Body, and Vagus Nerve Summit. Hmm. And she asked me to be the headline for the event to get that topic out to everybody. Little did I realize, so this was January 2020. We're not quite in COVID yet.
Yeah.
I've recorded this episode. COVID hits in March, and the Mind Body Vagus Nerve Summit, where I headlined, came out in May. The timeline was about as perfect as you could ask for mm-hmm. because there were 250,000 people that watched that summit, and I was the first name on it, which was crazy. So that was really the main driver that pushed and accelerated my growth, because all these practitioners were watching. They wanted me to do Instagram Lives with them, and then it became much more, which was really timing wise worked out. That said, I was really plugging away. I did every podcast I could imagine prior to that. Yep. I got in touch with every single person I could in the world that I'm functioning in. Mm-hmm. And that was really the ultimate growth of something that could very easily have been like a paperweight.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you said that, because we're not going to wait for this pandemic to launch a book, right? We want to, you know, get on an online summit. You still have to get up there and grind, whether there's a whether you're lucky enough to have a bigger audience or not. I interviewed Robert Kiyosaki about this years ago. And when his first book came out, he would do an interview anytime, anywhere. He's on some radio station at 2 o'clock in the morning in South Dakota. He didn't care. Just get out there as often as you can to get it going. Do you still have the same volume of interviews and stuff, or after it launches, do you pull back a little bit?
I've pulled back a little, mostly because I'm working in the business as well. That said, I kept it up and I've maintained approximately 1 to 2 podcasts a week that on or recording with somebody. So there is an ongoing thing. I realize this is one of the biggest thing to realize is it's not just about launch. Launch is great. Launch gets you on the charts. It gets you on the top of Amazon. It does all those things. Mm-hmm. But my book, first one, didn't take off until about a year and a half later. It was the constant little grind that pushed to the point where then it started to really take off. And
that we've gotten to the point where I've talked 40,000 so many copies people.
Have been sold of the first book.
I'm sorry, how many?
40,000.
How many copies?
Of the book.
40,000 copies of the first
40, book. 40,000 copies.
And how's this one tracking?
We're sitting, I haven't gotten great dates yet, but we're sitting around 1,000 sold in the first month that I know
that's
of.
That's terrific. So
that's a big deal for me, yeah.
Great job. Great job. Do you do the audiobook version?
I'm recording it in a month.
Good. Good. You guys, your voice?
Lucky enough, this is something I learned because we did an audiobook for the second one or for the first one, but I wasn't the one recording it. And I didn't even know that it was being done when it happened. On the second contract, I made absolutely certain that I either knew what was going on and I had final say as to who was going to be the voice of it, because I got a lot of feedback that the voice of the first one was not great. I made absolutely certain that I would be in the running to do it myself. And it turned out, as I sent it over, I'm working with Tantor Media for the audiobook, and they listened to my podcast and they said, perfect, let's get you on there. And so I'm recording in a month, which is exciting.
In case you're wondering what he's talking about, folks, Dr. Habib is a traditional publisher, yes?
Yes, absolutely, so, through Ulysses Press.
Yeah, they kind of tell him who's going to narrate his book or not. So he had to audition to narrate his own book. And, you know, people ask me that all the time. Should I narrate it myself or hire somebody? And I say it's 50-50, depending on how they sound. But I felt more comfortable when it's the actual author, for the most part, reading their book, provided they sound okay. The only exception would be a fiction book. Fiction books, I love having a professional narrator on a fiction book because it's a theater of the mind. But for nonfiction, you've got the cred. I mean, you've got a good voice anyway. But even if your voice was average, I'd still recommend the authors record it if possible, because it feels more authentic, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. I know when I'm listening to an audiobook and it's read by the author, I know I'm getting the real, like the inflection's happening at the right point. The emphasis is on the right syllable, right? Like things are happening and it's being pronounced the way that I want to hear.
Right, right. There's that, the energy of it, right? Maybe his vagus nerve is being activated in a positive, stressful manner reading his own book. So maybe it sounds better.
Exactly.
I'm making stuff up now. wow, it's great to have you on. Where can they get the new book? Where do they go?
You can get the new book anywhere. Amazon's probably the easiest place to go. It's Upgrade Your Vagus Nerve one more time.
Okay.
And if you're interested in learning more about me and what I do, you can go to vagusnervebook.com. Remember, it's V-A-G-U-S, vagusnervebook.com. And that'll take you down my rabbit hole of podcast and working with me and whatnot.
Did you buy the other URL with the V-E-G-A-S, Vegas Nerve Book?
Not yet. That's a really good
mine
idea.
Mine as well. I bet you nobody's got it. You could just redirect that URL so they both go to the right place.
To the other one. Yes, exactly.
Just a little marketing tidbit for you there, Dr. Habib. You know, I want to help.
Smart idea. I was even going to get, I was listening to some really interesting stuff, and it talked about getting a two-letter a URL. Domain, so I was going to do vnbook.com as well, which I'll probably do
that's not a bad idea.
This.
It's fast. Easier. People remember pretty well, but yeah.
Yeah.
Good deal. Well, it's great having the show again, as always. Thank you very much. Congratulations on your new book. I can't wait to read it myself. Haven't done it yet, but I will. And I'm working on my breathing now. Every single day, I'm going to work on my diaphragmatic breathing. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Appreciate it.